When you talk with the man who promoted the war in Iraq, one question comes to mind. What made you think then, in December of 2002, that Iraqis were ready for what we would know as a liberal democracy or something not far from it?
See, Steve, that's a really good question.
One that Kanan Makia struggles with. He's the latest in our conversations with people of long experience. We call this series The Long View. Kanan Makia is an Iraqi who fled Saddam Hussein's regime. He wrote an influential book called Republic of Fear. And before the war to remove Saddam, he told President Bush that Americans would be greeted with sweets and flowers. Vice President Cheney referred to his assurances on television. But when Makia himself returned to a liberated Iraq, his dreams were frustrated. Here's how he explains his optimistic forecasts from 2002.
I take the view that politics is not a science, it's an art. It's about what is possible in a given situation. When I look back at that period and I say, did I really think that there could be democracy? Yes. But where my illusions lay not in those millions of ordinary people. The failure lies in the leadership, the Iraqi leadership above all.
Well, can you think of a moment when you arrived in Iraq with these hopes, and you began to realize that reality was moving another way?
When I saw how the governing council was behaving, I saw that body of the most enlightened Iraqis, most of whom came from outside Iraq, immediately catering to the lowest common denominator, thinking and appealing to sectarian politics. So, give you an example. First, the 25 members, there were exactly 13 Shiites, 12 non-Shiites, Kurds, Sunni Arabs, and Christians, and the whole thing was supposed to be a perfect reflection of the mosaic of Iraqi society. And it was a very representative body. So the first thing these 13 Shiites did was they formed a Shiite caucus. And the Shiite caucus met separately from the governing council and tried to take decisions that they would then vote on en masse. What that meant was other Sunni members of the governing council suddenly realized with a shock that they were voting as Shiites, not as citizens with the interests of the whole of Iraq paramount in their minds.
Did something else happen that caused you to lose even more hope and caused you to leave then, a year or so later?
When the issue is still, you know, at the level of elites and so on, there's still a hope that it hasn't infected the whole of society. But as the insurgency grew, I realized that essentially Pandora's box had been opened, the Furies had been released, and the politicians of Iraq were not artful enough to contain or to manage those Furies.
Are Iraqis the same people that you thought they were?
Of course not. I mean, people are in constant change. 35 years of Saddam's regime changed many, many things about Iraq.
Years that you'd been away from Iraq.
Yes, I do not for a second deny that. But also, you know, it's one thing to understand those changes theoretically. That is to understand what being a victim does to one's way of thinking about the world. It's another thing to see it in practice. I nonetheless thought it was possible for former victims with the right leadership to rise above their victimhood. That's not what happened in Iraq. People essentially became trapped in their victimhood. I mean, the rituals of violence we're seeing played out now, it's abused turning into an abuser. It's an old, old cycle.
Are you on some level saying that Iraqis were unable to see the opportunities that people like you were pointing to? And if so, I wonder if there are Iraqis who would turn around and say to you, well, your ideas were wrong, they simply don't fit in this time and this place, and you were always unrealistic about what you hoped.
They may be right. I accept that observation. But I would maybe perhaps say the same thing in a slightly different way. I had a hope. That hope turned out to be wrong. Does that mean, for instance, I should change my position on the war? That's impossible for me to say. I don't know how. I don't know the language. I can't find the words in which to say it was wrong to support the overthrow of that particular regime. I don't have the moral language to say that, and I challenge anybody to give it to me. I never argued for this war on the basis of weapons of mass destruction or on the basis of national security. I argued for it simply as a humanitarian case.
When you had an opportunity to talk to administration officials and give them advice before the war, and you had that laudable motive in mind to end suffering under Saddam Hussein, do you think that clouded your judgment when people asked you how realistic this enterprise might be?
It's possible. When you're driven by the desire to rid a country of that kind of tyranny, one has a tendency to perhaps stretch the possibilities and so exaggerate the possibilities of things, unintended.
George Packer, in his book The Assassin's Gate, writes of the occasions when, for example, you told the president that troops would be greeted with sweets and flowers in Iraq. And he writes of Kenan Makiya, "He made himself forget what he knew long enough to say a few words to the president of the United States that will someday feature prominently in his obituary." Is that a true statement?
Well, that's such a hard one. I believed it and had every reason to believe it. You know, there was truth to the statement. A majority of Shiites and Kurds and of Iraqis in general did welcome their liberators. But lots of things went wrong very quickly. Above all, is the looting. The sense of insecurity that today pervades Baghdad was born on the day of liberation of Iraq, April 9th, 2003, when looting went rampant. And when you combine that with the suspicions of American intentions and motives, you overlay that on top of the victimhood, being a victim of this regime for such a long period of time, a generation and a half, you end up with a powerful melange of feelings that can quickly switch from sort of celebration to anger. Now, none of that was understood to me or could be predicted by me at the time that I told the president those words.
Now that you're back in the United States, back at Brandeis University, how closely do you follow the news from Iraq?
Oh, very closely, but there have been times, I'll be honest with you, where it's hard to pick up a newspaper. You just can't read anymore. The issue for me is thinking it all through. Could I have foreseen things better than I did? Could I have said things? The failure of the Iraqi political class post-2003. Am I refusing to see a reality on the ground that somehow percolated and surfaced through these leaders that I was just unwilling to listen to? I don't know the answers to these questions.
That's The Long View from Kenan Makiya, an Iraqi now back at Brandeis University in Massachusetts. Could you imagine living in Iraq ever again?
It's a painful subject. I know that for years now, I can't.
You can hear more Long View conversations at npr.org. And tomorrow, we'll meet an architect of the war who's now teaching college students about wartime decisions.